Spoon River Anthology by Edgar Lee Masters.
Where are Elmer, Herman, Bert, Tom, and Charlie?
The weak of will, the strong of arm, the clown, the boozer, the fighter.
All are sleeping on the hill.
One passed in a fever.
One was burned in a mine.
One was killed in a brawl.
One died in jail.
One fell from a bridge, toiling for children and wife.
All are sleeping on the hill.
Where are Ella, Kate, Mag, Lizzie, and Edith?
The tender heart, the simple soul, the loud, the proud, the happy one.
All are sleeping on the hill.
When died in shameful childbirth,
one of a thwarted love,
one at the hands of a brute in a brothel,
one of a broken pride in the search for heart's desire,
one after life in far away London and Paris was brought to her little space by Ella and Kate and Mag.
All are sleeping on the hill.
Where are Uncle Isaac and Aunt Emily?
And old Townie Kincaid and Sivine Hooten.
And Major Walker, who had talked with venerable men of the Revolution.
All are sleeping on the hill.
They brought them dead sons from the war.
And daughters whom life had crushed.
And their children, fatherless, crying.
All are sleeping on the hill.
Where is old Fiddler Jones, who played with life all his 90 years?
Braving the sleet with bared breast.
Drinking, rioting, thinking neither of wife, nor kin, nor gold, nor love, nor heaven.
Lo, he babbles of the fish fries of long ago.
Of the horse races of long ago at Clary's Grove.
Of what Abe Lincoln said one time at Springfield.
From Bindle's Opera House in the village to Broadway is a great step. But I tried to take it. My ambition fired when 16 years of age. Seeing East Lynne played here in the village by Ralph Barrett, the coming romantic actor who enthralled my soul. True, I trailed back home, a broken failure. When Ralph disappeared in New York, leaving me alone in the city, but life broke him also. In all this place of silence, there are no kindred spirits. How I wish Doozy could stand amid the pathos of these quiet fields and read these words.
In life, I was a town drunkard. When I died, the priest denied me burial in holy ground. The witch redounded to my good fortune, for the Protestants bought this lot and buried my body here, close to the grave of banker Nicholas and his wife Priscilla. Take note, you prudent, pious souls, of the cross currents in life which bring honor to the dead who lived in shame.
Only the chemist can tell, and not always the chemist, what will result from compounding fluids or solids, and who can tell how men and women will interact on each other, or what children will result. There were Benjamin Painter and his wife, good in themselves, but evil towards each other. He oxygen, she hydrogen, their son a devastating fire. I, Trainer, the druggist, a mixture of chemicals, killed while making an experiment, lived unwedded.
I am Minerva, the village poetess, hooted at, jeered at by the yahoos of the street. From my heavy body, cockeye, and rolling walk. And all the more when Butch Weldy captured me after a booter hunt. He left me to my fate with Dr. Myers, and I sank into death, growing numb from the feet up, like one stepping deeper and deeper into a stream of ice. Will someone go to the village newspaper and gather into a book the verses I wrote? I thirsted so for love. I hungered so for life.
You would not believe, would you, that I came from Goodwell's stock? That I was pure-blooded than the white trash here, and of more direct lineage than the New Englanders and Virginians of Spoon River? You would not believe that I had been to school and read some books. You saw me only as a run-down man, with matted hair and beard and ragged clothes. Sometimes a man's life turns into a cancer, from being bruised and continually bruised, and swells into a purplish mass, like growths on stalks of corn. Here was I, a carpenter, mired in a bog of life, into which I walked, thinking it was a meadow, with a slattern for a wife, and poor Minerva, my daughter, whom you tormented and drove to death. So I crept like a snail through the days of my life. No more you hear my footsteps in the morning, resounding on the hollow sidewalk, going to the grocery store for a little cornmeal and a nickel's worth of bacon.
No other man, unless it was Dark Hill, did more for people in this town than I. And all the weak, the hot, the improvident, and those who could not pay flocked to me. I was good-hearted, easy Dr. Myers. I was healthy, happy, in comfortable fortune, blessed with a congenial mate, my children raised, all wedded, doing well in the world. And then one night, Minerva, the poetess, came to me in her trouble, crying. I tried to help her out. She died. They indicted me. The newspapers disgraced me. My wife perished of a broken heart. And pneumonia finished me.
He protested all his life long that newspapers lied about him villainously, that it was not at fault for Minerva's fall, but only tried to help her. Poor soul, so sunk in sin he could not see that even trying to help her, as he called it, he had broken the law, human and divine. Passers-by, an ancient admonition to you. If your ways be ways of pleasantness, and all your pathways peace, love God and keep his commandments.
Did you ever hear of Editor Whedon giving to the public treasury any of the money he received for supporting candidates for office, or for writing up the canning factory to get people to invest, or for suppressing the facts about the bank when it was rotten and ready to break? Did you hear of the circuit judge helping anyone except the Q Railroad or the bankers? Or did Reverend Pete or Reverend Sibley give any part of their salary earned by keeping still or speaking out as the leaders wished them to do, to the building of the waterworks? But I, Daisy Fraser, who always passed along the streets through rows of nods and smiles and coughs and words such as, "There she goes," never was taken before Justice Arnett without contributing $10 and costs to the school fund of Spoon River.
No, not in that wasted garden where bodies are drawn into grass, that feeds no flocks, and into evergreens that bear no fruit. There, where along the shady walks, vain sighs are heard, and vainer dreams are dreamed of close communion with departed souls. But here, under the apple tree, I loved and watched and pruned with gnarled hands in the long, long years. Here, under the roots of this northern spy, to move in the chemic change and circle of life, and into the living epitaphs of redder apples.
Pine tree, the balmy air of spring whispers through the sweet grass, the stars sparkle, the whippoorwill calls, but thou grievest while my soul lies rapturous in the blessed nirvana of eternal light. Go to the good heart that is my husband, who broods upon what he calls our guilty love. Tell him that my love for you, no less than my love for him, wrought out my destiny. That through the flesh I won spirit, and through spirit, peace. There is no marriage in heaven, but there is love.
We quarreled that morning, for he was 65 and I was 30. And I was nervous and heavy with the child whose birth I dreaded. I thought over the last letter written me by that estranged young soul, whose betrayal of me I had concealed by marrying the old man. Then I took morphine and sat down to read, across the blackness that came over my eyes. I see the flickering light of these words even now. And Jesus said unto him, Verily, I say unto thee, today thou shalt be with me in paradise.
I belong to the church and to the party of prohibition. And the villagers thought I died of eating watermelon. In truth, I had cirrhosis of the liver. For every noon, for 30 years, I slipped behind the prescription partition in Trainer's drugstore and poured a generous drink from the bottle marked Spiritus Frumenti.
Reverend Wiley advised me not to divorce him, for the sake of the children, and Judge Somers advised him the same. So we stuck to the end of the path, but two of the children thought he was right, and two of the children thought I was right, and the two who sided with him blamed me, and the two who sided with me blamed him. And they grieved for the one they sided with, and all were torn with guilt of judging, and tortured in soul because they could not admire equally him and me. Now, every gardener knows that plants grow in cellars, or under stones are twisted and yellow and weak, and no mother would let her baby suck diseased milk from her breast. Yet preachers and judges advise the raising of souls, where there is no sunlight, but only twilight, no warmth, but only dampers and cold. Preachers and judges.
I was only 8 years old, and before I grew up and knew what it meant, I had no words for it, except that I was frightened and told my mother, and that my father got a pistol and would have killed Charlie, who was a big boy, 15 years old, except for his mother. Nevertheless, the story clung to me. But the man who married me, a widower of 35, was a newcomer and never heard it, till 2 years after we were married. Then he considered himself cheated, and the village agreed that I was not really a virgin. Well, he deserted me, and I died the following winter.
Here lies the body of Lois Spears, born Lois Fluke, daughter of Willard Fluke, wife of Cyrus Spears, mother of Myrtle and Virgil Spears. Children with clear eyes and sound limbs, I was born blind. I was the happiest of women, as wife, mother, and housekeeper, caring for my loved ones, and making my home a place of order and bounteous hospitality. For I went about the rooms and about the garden with an instinct as sure as sight, as though there were eyes in my fingertips. Glory to God in the highest.
Place I worked was at Thomas Green's. On a summer's day when she was away, he stole into the kitchen and took me right in his arms and kissed me on my throat, I turning my head. Then neither of us seemed to know what happened. I cried for what would become of me, and I cried and cried as my secret began to show. One day, Mrs. Green said she understood and would make no trouble for me, and, being childless, would adopt it. He had given her a farm to be still. So she hid in the house and sent out rumors, as if it were going to happen to her. All went well and the child was born. They were so kind to me. Later, I married Gus Wertman, and years passed. But, at political rallies when sitters-by thought I was crying at the eloquence of Hamilton Green, that was not it. No, I wanted to say, that's my son! That's my son!
I was the only child of Francis Harris of Virginia and Thomas Green of Kentucky, of valiant and honorable blood both. To them I owe all that I became. Judge, member of Congress, leader in the state. From my mother, I inherited vivacity, fancy, language. From my father, will, judgment, logic. All honor to them for what service I was to the people.
When he came home, he told me the silly story of being kidnapped by pirates on Lake Michigan and kept in chains so he could not write me. I pretended to believe it, though I knew very well what he was doing, and that he met the milliner, Mrs. Williams, now and then, when she went to the city to buy goods, as she said. But a promise is a promise, and marriage is marriage.
and out of respect for my own character, I refused to be drawn into a divorce by the scheme of a husband who had merely grown tired of his marital vow and duty.
Dust of my dust, and dust with my dust. Oh, child, who died as you entered the world, dead with my death, not knowing breath, though you tried so hard, with a heart that beat when you lived with me, and stopped when you left me for life. It is well, my child, for you never traveled the long, long way that begins with school days, when little fingers blur under the tears that fell on the crooked letters, and the earliest wound when a little maid leaves you for another, and sickness and the face of fear by the bed, the death of a father or a mother, or shame of them or poverty, the maiden sorrow of school days ended, and eyeless nature that makes you drink from a cup of love, though you know it's poisoned. To whom would your flower face have been lifted? Botanist? Weakling? Cry of what blood to yours? Pure or foul, for it makes no matter. It's blood that calls to our blood. And then your children, oh, what might they be? And what's your sorrow, child, child? Death is better than life.
I wrote him a letter, asking him for old time's sake, to discharge my sick boy from the army, but maybe he couldn't read it. Then I went to town and had James Garber, who wrote beautifully, write him a letter. But maybe that was lost in the mails. So I traveled all the way to Washington. I was more than an hour finding the White House. And when I found it, they turned me away, hiding their smiles. Then I thought, oh well, he ain't the same as when I boarded him. And he and my husband worked together, and all of us called him Abe there in Menard. As a last attempt, I turned to a guard and said, please say it's old Aunt Hannah Armstrong from Illinois come to see him about her sick boy in the army. Well, just in a moment, they let me in, and when he saw me, he broke in a laugh and dropped his business as president and wrote in his own hand Doug's discharge, talking the while of the early days and telling stories.
You have been listening to excerpts from Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology, presented by the high school drama students of the American International School in Vienna, Austria. This production was directed by Michael Marinucci with technical direction by Karen Meyer. The original guitar accompaniment was composed by Renato Kohler.